tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and this hour, quiz shows. Later on, the amazing Quiz Kids from 1951. But first, it's Information Please with moderator Clifton Fadiman. A great broadcast next, heard on the NBC Blue Network on June 20th, 1941.
It's half past 8.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to try your wits against the wits of its experts. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. And if your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please continues in its happy-go-lucky and completely spontaneous manner. And tonight, the sports expert John Kieran and the New York Post's conning tower man, Franklin P. Adams, retain their regular positions. That means we have two guests. One, the Honorable James Wallace of the New York Court of General Sessions, has been with us before, and we're very glad to welcome him back. The other is a newcomer to this program, and he needs no introduction whatsoever to any American citizen, the Honorable Alfred E. Smith. Now, gentlemen and ladies, remember, for every question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with the first question, which comes to us from Miss Mary E. Coppell of Geneva, Illinois. I'm going to read three lines, one after the other, as is my custom. And I'm going to ask you to complete the lines and name the authors. Here's the first. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat, we have several hands. Mr. Adams.
No stranger in the crowd could doubt was Casey at the bat.
Attaboy. Very good. And I believe, Judge, you were about to say the same thing.
Yes.
Good enough.
Gentleman
now,
named Thayer was the author, I believe.
Who is the author, Judge?
Thayer.
Thayer is quite right.
You mean Ernest L. Thayer? Why don't you say so?
Time is precious on this program.
Not to you, apparently, Judge. Now, let us go on to the second one. Here, Skug lies snug. How does it go on? Mr. Adams again.
As a bug in a rug.
Attaboy, and who said it?
Anon.
Oh, no, no. You have to give me the author. The author, gentlemen? Who is the author of that?
I don't know.
Same mistake. The author is Benjamin Franklin. What did you say, Mr. Kieran?
Mrs. Skug.
It was Benjamin Franklin in a letter to one of his female correspondents, and I don't know whether he invented the phrase or not, but the phrase has become famous since his time. That's one wrong. Now get the next one right, or we lose $25. Go, your lover lives, said Cromwell. Mr. Smith.
If you shall not ring tonight.
Attaboy, Mr. Smith, that's fine. And, Mr. Smith, who wrote it? That's not so easy. Mr. Kieran?
Rose Hartwick Thorpe.
Attaboy, that's very good. Thank you for helping out the governor. That gives us 2 out of 3. And sends us on to the question, the next one, from S. Bleeker of New Boston, Massachusetts. Again, get 2 out of 3. Now, I'm going to ask you to name the man who is being offered as a presidential nominee in each of these imaginary speeches that we've made up. I'm going to deliver them, and you have to name the man at the end of my speech. Here we go. They were all presidents. Now, here we go. The Buckeye State is proud to offer in nomination the man who has ably served his state and nation as a judge, a governor of the Philippines, and as Secretary of War. I give you Mr. Adams.
William Howard Taft.
Not the slightest doubt of it. Very good. Now the next one. The Empire State offers to this great convention a man distinguished as a sheriff of the Great Erie County, mayor of the Bison City, and governor of the largest state in the Union. I give you Judge Wallace.
Grover Cleveland.
Grover Cleveland. I had 4 hands up. Everybody knew the answer there. Now how about this one? The Bay State is happy to present to this convention a native son who has served as member of both houses of the state legislature and president of the upper house, lieutenant governor and governor, and who emerged as a national leader from a grave emergency that challenged the hub, I give you Mr.
Calvin Coolidge.
All right, Mr. Adams, Mr. Kieran, and the judge, and Mr. Smith, Calvin Coolidge is right. Too easy. Not enough presidents.
I admired the wind machine.
I also admire your Keystone stuff.
Yeah, you think it was any good? What wind machine were you referring to, Judge?
I was referring to that tumultuous.
I see. I just wanted to get you right.
The mechanical one, Mr. Panaman.
Now, gentlemen, here is something a little harder. This comes from Samuel H. Monk of Memphis, Tennessee, and again, get 2 out of 3. From what source is each of these titles derived? They're titles of books or plays or movies. Tell me what they come from. The first is Once Aboard the Lugger. It's a novel by A.S.M. Hutchinson. Mr. Adams.
And the girl is mine.
At a boy.
But
that's
hockey,
right.
No violence.
Oh, you know the rest of it, too, do you, Judge? And Mr. Adams and Judge Wallace, what's it from? What's the source of the line?
I think it's from some old melodrama.
Yes?
What, I don't know.
Is that the name of it, What, you don't know?
What melodrama? Escapes me.
The Black-Eyed Susan.
No. Okay. I think you have to give me the source. Otherwise, I have to mark you wrong. It's from a play by an old melodrama writer, Dion Boucicault. Boucicault, Mr. Smith?
The Shock Run.
That's right. You should know that, Mr. Smith. Any particular reason?
Yes, I played Curry Kinchilla.
All right, we'll call that right. An assist from the governor. Now, how about this one? It's a bestseller of the present moment by Eric Knight called This Above All. What's the source? Mr. Kieran.
This above all to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night to day, etc.
Yes.
Polonius to Laertes.
Yes, in the play?
Hamlet.
In the play Hamlet. That's a perfect answer. And how about this one? This is a movie, I think. Strawberry Blonde. Strawberry Blonde, what's it from? Mr. Adams.
Casey would waltz with the Strawberry Blonde.
That's right. Do you know how it goes on?
And the band played on is the name of the song.
And the band played on. Very good. I don't think a great many people knew that. The judge had his hand up and probably is going to say the same thing.
Any child would know.
Oh, yeah. We've
sung
how
do you happen to know
time,
it then, Mr.
Adams?
Frank? How about this one from E. Irving Stewart of Portland, Oregon? Again, get 2 out of 3. This is something about our own profession, Mr. Adams, which is the profession of radio. Identify these firsts in broadcasts. What was the first broadcast of a presidential convention? When and what was the occasion? Mr. Smith.
1924.
That's absolutely right. What was the occasion, Mr. Smith?
Democratic National Convention at Madison Square Garden.
And Madison Square Garden, and who was nominated at that time?
John W. Davis.
John W. Davis. And is that the famous convention in which Alabama cast 24 votes for Underwood? Was that the one?
That was the time Woodrow Wilson was nominated.
That was the same convention.
That's the same convention.
Stop fighting, gentlemen.
Same convention.
I think I will defer to the governor, Judge, if you don't mind. I think that phrase did become famous, as the governor reminds us, in 1924.
I remember hearing it when Woodrow Wilson was nominated, and I'll stick to my story.
All right, now you stick to it. We don't mind. How about this one? The first broadcast of a heavyweight championship fight. The first broadcast of a heavyweight championship fight. What one? Mr. Smith.
FIPO.
No, guess not. That'd be wrong. Any guesses now? As long as we're wrong, Mr. Kieran.
I'll guess it was Boyle's 30 Acres... Dempsey against Carpentier.
Why didn't you say that before, Mr. Kieran, before Mr. Smith opened his mouth?
Well, as a matter of fact, I know somebody who worked on the broadcast.
Yes. Who was the broadcaster at that time? Do you remember?
Major Andrew White,
that's
perhaps.
That's exactly right, Mr. Kieran. That's pretty... I'm surprised. You have a very good memory, Mr. Kieran. Nevertheless, I'll have to count that wrong, because Mr. Smith came in first with a slightly wrong answer. Now, how about this one? What was the first broadcast of a presidential address to the people? The first broadcast of a presidential address to the people of the United States. I think these are interesting facts. Any guesses? How about it, Mr. Kieran?
I'll guess Woodrow Wilson.
No, that would be wrong. Warren Harding, in June 1923, spoke to the citizenry about the World Court for the first time over the air. And that, I think, will send $25 to Mr. Stewart, plus a copy of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and will send us on to the next question from Mrs. Marie Van Sant of Absecon, New Jersey. Again, get 2 out of 3. If these lines of song or poetry that I'm going to read should inspire you to plant a garden, what flowers would bloom in it? And here is the first set of lines. Tell them, dear, that if eyes were made for seeing, then beauty is its own excuse for being. Mr. Kieran.
Rhodora.
Rhodora. What's
By
the
Emerson,
reference?
To a Rhodora.
To a Rhodora. What is a Rhodora, Mr. Kieran?
Well, it's as a matter of fact, I haven't seen it in a while, so I can't give you a very...
You're rather snobbish. Unless you see it in the wild, you don't recognize it. Is it anything like a rhododendron? It sounds as if it would be.
No, I believe it's much smaller than a rhododendron. Yes.
And the lines, as Mr. Kieran remembered...
Beauty is its own excuse for being.
That's right. Very few people, I think, would know that. It's a poem by Ralph Waldo Emerson. How about this one? And it was nothing more. What flower does that recall to you, Mr. Adams?
A primrose.
A primrose. Can you give us the lines that...
By the river's brim.
A primrose by a river's brim.
Yes.
A simple... A yellow primrose was to him, and it was nothing more.
Yes. Who wrote the lines?
Wordsworth.
Wordsworth. That's right. A
primrose. Peter Bell.
Now we have... That's absolutely right, Mr. Adams. That gives us Rhodora and primrose in our small garden. Here's the last one. Silently, one by one, in the infinite meadows of heaven, blossomed the lovely stars. Mr. Adams again.
Forget-me-nots of the angels.
Perfect, Mr. Adams. That's very good. Very good. What's it from?
Evangeline.
Yes, by whom?
H.W. Longfellow.
Thought I'd catch you there, Mr. Adams. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Now, how about this one? This comes from Frank Garitano of Bridgeport, Connecticut. There is a rumor current, by the way, that at least three of the gentlemen now serving as experts have some slight ability as harmonizers. We intend to kill that rumor immediately. This question involves a test of your expertness in harmonizing. I'm going to read you a group of songs, just the titles, four of them, and you can select one that the four of you will agree you're going to sing. When you've made a selection, you have to sing as a quartet in harmony. Now, we have dragged down tonight the Honorable Deans Taylor and the Honorable Oscar Levant to act as judges in this harmonizing contest. And if they say you're good, well, it's hard to know what to say. If they say you're bad, we lose $25 in a set of the Britannica. Now, here are four
songs. Do they get the... they share in the...
They don't get a thing out of this. No, they don't get a thing out of it. They are just
like
for the fun.
Like a fair and impartial jury to me.
Now, which of these four songs would you like to sing, gentlemen? In the Evening by the Moonlight, Sweet Genevieve, Sweet Marie, She Was Bred in Old Kentucky. Judge?
Marie.
Sweet Marie,
Marie
Mr. Smith?
She was bred in Old Kentucky.
How about
I yield.
Mr. Kieran? Do you care?
In the Evening by the Moonlight.
How about She Was Bred...
Yes,
she was bred in Old Kentucky. All right, I'll have the pianist give you the key.
Yeah, just the chorus.
Just the chorus, gentlemen. Get set on your marks.
She was bred in Old Kentucky, where the meadow grass is blue. There's the sunshine of the country in her face and meadow, too. She was bred.
That was remarkable,
gentlemen. You know, there's a parody on that.
Don't sing it.
She was bred in Old Kentucky. She was pie in New Orleans. But in Boston, she was only pork and beans.
Didn't expect to get the added grace notes, Mr. Smith. And now, Justice Levant and Justice Taylor, what is your opinion?
Well,
yes or no?
Don't shilly or shally.
Well, candidly, I think it stands alone. it has no bass.
Has no what?
No bass.
Oh, no, you didn't hear that? That
no,
was
heard, no bass
you just
at all.
Didn't hear
no,
it
was all first baritone and tenor.
What's your opinion, Mr.
Well, there was no predominance of boy soprano there either. I thought it was rather distinguished in the grand manner, and in the pool room grand manner.
Well, would you pass these, gentlemen, Mr. Levant?
It was long before our judgment. The audience passed, and so did we.
Oh, it's up to you. How about it, Mr. Taylor?
I stand alone against the audience.
Well, I've got a division of opinion. The audience...
Just critic.
I'm not going to allow the audience to judge this. I have a no mm-hmm. from Mr. Taylor and a yes from Mr. Levant. Is that
two
right?
Two yeses for me. There's a judge and a governor on the
In the event of a split jury, which is what we have, I think the only fair thing is to give the $25 and the Britannica to Mr. Frank Garitano, which I will now do. Thank you very much.
I think this tailor is a red.
Personally, gentlemen, I don't think you're bad. So far, Lucky Strike has paid out, therefore, $50 and two sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now, gentlemen, how about beginning, if you have recovered from your harmonizing, the second half of the program with a question from Michael Walsh of Hollis, Long Island. Mr. Walsh, appropriately enough, has worked out a question involving Irish names. Give four common expressions, gentlemen, that include an Irish name. For example, tell it to Sweeney would be one. Don't give me that back, please. Mr. Adams.
Life of Riley.
Life of Riley is a peach.
Slide Kelly Hollis. Slide.
I beg your pardon?
Slide Kelly Slide.
Slide Kelly Slide. That gives us two very good ones. How about, Mr. Smith, are you suffering from what might be called Mike Fright, which gives us a third?
I didn't get the question.
Four common expressions, not too common, that include an Irish name. How about it, Mr. Kieran?
Well, you said we couldn't use the Life of Sweeney, but they say run for Sweeney. That something runs for Sweeney.
Okay. I'd rather have another one.
Well, take it on the Bill Daly.
Well, never heard of that.
That's a racing.
The Life okay. of Riley.
The Life of Riley. I think that was mentioned by Mr. Adams,
was
Judge.
It? Oh, pardon me. I thought you said the Life of Sweeney.
Mr. Smith, did you have your hand up?
Well, I was. That's when I had mine.
I see. You'd like, you all like that.
I'm living the Life of Riley.
You certainly are popular.
I guess
Mr.
I don't
Adams.
Talk loud enough. Never know the old place.
How about Mr. Adams?
Potatoes O'Brien.
Oh, very good. Very good. Potatoes O'Brien is a peach. Mr. Smith.
Casey at the bat.
Well, I wouldn't call it a... Yes, I suppose you could use it as an expression. Sure, that comes up all the time. That gives us four. How about the Murphy's for potatoes?
Yeah, Murphy's for potatoes.
Maggie Murphy's home.
All right, Mr. Smith.
How about Standing Pat?
Okay, and I'll end on that one.
How about Pat Pending, the inventor?
Oh, getting worse and worse. How about this one from Marie T. Slicer of Alexandria, Virginia? Get two out of three. Come to your senses, Mr. Adams. Gentlemen, who signs the president's paycheck? The president of the United States. Who signs the president's paycheck? Mr. Smith?
Controller.
No, I think that would be wrong. Mr. Adams?
The treasurer of the United States.
Who is that, Mr. Adams?
I've no idea, but that's he signs army checks, too.
Yes, he does, but we have
but
to
know. Oh, the difference to me.
Mr. Kerry.
Well, I don't know whether he still holds the job. This man named Burke held it at one
time. No, the present holder of the office of treasurer who signs the president's check is William A. Julian.
Oh, by yes, the way, that's right.
How much does the president get for his services, Mr. Smith?
$75,000.
Yes, and underpaid, wouldn't you say?
Very much.
Yes. All right, that settles that. We'll see if we can fix it up. Does the president pay an income tax? Mr. Smith?
Yes.
He does indeed. Is the vice president, gentlemen, a member of the cabinet? Is the vice president, Mr. Smith?
No.
He is not. That gives us three out of three. Thank you very much. Two out of three. Thank you, Mr. Smith. And how about this one from Joseph Israels of this city, New York City? Get two out of three. Identify these famous military organizations, which are fictitious. They're imaginary ones, but they're famous nevertheless. The first is the Mulligan Guards. Judge Wallace.
Well, the Mulligan Guards were Harrigan and Hart's creation.
Who were Harrigan and Hart?
Harrigan
That's quite correct.
Harrigan and Hart were two very celebrated actors, singers, entertainers of 30 or 40 years ago.
Yes.
Mr. Harrigan had a couple of theaters, and Tony Hart was his partner.
Yes. And
the children are still on the stage.
Well, that gives
Harrigan.
Us a complete story. That's right. Thank you, Judge. That was the subtitle of a series of plays was the Mulligan Guards. Now, how about the Horse Marines? The Horse Marines. Mr. Smith.
Captain Jinx.
Captain Jinx of the Horse Marines. And can you tell us anything about that famous melodrama, Mr. Smith? Who wrote it, for one? Can you? Who starred in it?
I know Ethel Barrymore started it.
Who did, Judge?
Ethel Barrymore.
Ethel Barrymore,
it,
yes.
But she wasn't the first. I can't recall who the
No, it was her first starring vehicle.
It was her first starring vehicle.
And who wrote it? Mr. Adams, any idea? Well, it was Clyde Fitch.
Clyde Fitch.
Clyde Fitch. Now, how about this? The Baker Street Irregulars. Can you identify them? Mr. Kieran.
The Baker Street Irregulars were Sherlock Holmes' auxiliary force.
What do they consist of? What were
Street Arabs.
Street Arabs, yes. And doesn't it also, isn't there a... A
There's
club of that name?
Club with Christopher Morley.
Oh, yes.
Yes, our old friend Christopher Morley is one of the irregulars.
Plus 3 hours for lunch.
And don't grab the check. From T.A. Shaheen of Groton, Massachusetts, comes this one. Get two
Groton.
Out of three, if you can.
Groton, please.
Groton.
Oh, Groton, of course, Groton. I was going to change the town. Groton, Massachusetts. What oaths taken by groups or individuals contain these pledges of loyalty? Here's the first. And that I take this obligation freely and without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. What oath is that?
An oath of a citizen of the United States.
Yes, so that's the final citizenship oath for the United States, for United States citizenship. That's quite right, Judge. Now, how about this one? That you will lead your lives and practice your art in uprightness and honor. From what oath is that? Judge Wallace.
That's the doctor's oath.
Yes.
Aesculapius.
I don't...
Hippocratic oath.
The Hippocratic oath, as Mr. Kieran reminds us.
You put me wrong.
Yes, taken by doctors.
Coming in with your
own... Mr. Kieran, about how old is that oath? How far back does it go?
I believe that is around 400 B.C.
Yes, it's something like that. So it is one of the oldest oaths on record and one of the most venerated. And here is the third and last oath. For better or for worse. Oh, we have any number of hands. I have two hands from the Honorable Alfred E. Smith. Mr. Smith.
Marriage.
Marriage oath, yes.
Do you
I think that's wrong. I think it's for better or for worse.
For better, comma, for worse?
Yes.
As
I don't
if you're
think
going
there's
to,
an R in it.
As if you're going to get both whether you knew it or not.
No, I think that's just the way it works.
How about that, Governor? Is it for better or for worse?
For better or for worse.
I believe so, yes. For better or for worse, which gives everything
in. In sickness or in health.
Yes, that's right. Till death do us part.
I do.
It's going to be very hard to keep the judge down. I can see that. Do you want to sing, Judge?
We have a song. Do you take this woman for your lawful wife?
If you want to sing, I have a question for you. This comes from M. Kurtz of New York City. Here we have... I'm going to give you a characteristic phrase from an old-time song. There are going to be three of them all together. And you'll prove...
Singing this time.
Oh, yes, plenty of it, so to speak. You'll prove that you recognize the song by singing part of the chorus. Oh, a few lines of it. And here's the first phrase. Independent air. Now, can you stop it? I'll give you the key. I sure... How about the... Mr. Adams, what one is that?
Broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
Well, can we get a few lines from you, gentlemen?
As I walk along, the boy belong with an independent air. You can hear the girls declare he must be a millionaire. You can hear them sigh and wish to die and see them wink the other eye at the man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
And one of the pleasantest things about that rendition is that on the last note, I couldn't see the faces of either one of you. How about this one? The Game of a Woman's Heart. What's it from, Judge?
The Moth and the Flame.
Would you like to sing a bit of it?
Certainly.
All right.
The Moth and the Flame played a game one day. It was the game of a woman's heart. But the moth, they say, was a maiden gay. The flame was a bad man's art. But the moth never knew, as so near she flew, that the flame was the light of shame. But she fluttered away just in time, so they say.
Attaboy, Adams.
That's the tale of the moth and the flame.
Very good. Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you, Mr. Smith. I think that's all we'll have time for on that particular one. That gives us two anyway. Now, how about this one? This comes from Harry Bastido of Freehold, New Jersey. Get two out of three if you can. If the president's calendar for a day, this is the president of the United States, if the president's calendar for a day included interviews about the following subjects, whom would he probably be consulting? Now, the first subject has to do with limiting the prices of commodities. With whom would he be speaking in that case? Mr. Kieran?
I'd say Mr. Henderson.
Yes, Mr. Leon Henderson. What's his office, Mr. Kieran?
He's a price fixer.
Gee, how did you guess that? Do any of you know the exact office that Mr. Henderson... holds, Mr. Smith, I can never remember all those initials.
Price Control.
Office of Price something and Civilian Supply, I think, something like that. Now, how about this one? Preventing violation of the antitrust laws. Suppose he was talking with someone about that. With whom would he be speaking, Mr. Smith?
Attorney General.
Solicitor General, who would that be in this case?
Biddle. Unless he's been promoted.
Solicitor General would be whom?
Francis Biddle was the solicitor general.
I guess that's right. I
Jackson thought... was, until he was appointed, unless he's been confirmed, the attorney general.
I thought it would be Mr. Thurman Arnold. What would you say, Mr.
Well, Thurman Arnold is the one who has been handling it.
One of the assistants?
Well, he might then consult either of those. Now, how about a discussion of the enforcement of the Draft Act? With whom would the president confer in that case? Discussion of the enforcement of the Draft Act.
Well,
Judge?
You mean the head of the draft board,
Who would that be? Who is in charge of the draft? Oh, it's a name that's been in all the papers lately.
Hershey?
Yes. Brigadier General Lewis Hershey. That gives us 3 out of 3. Not, however, a very difficult question, I think. Lucky Strike thanks you, Judge Wallace, and Mr. Smith for lending your authority and your voices to our party this evening. And Mr. Taylor and Mr. Levant. I mustn't forget them. Next week, Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran, and Mr. Adams will be batting them out as usual. And our guest of the evening will be Alfred Hitchcock, the world-famous motion picture director who directed such pictures as The 39 Steps, Rebecca, and The Lady Vanishers, and others. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets the sum of $10. Now, if the question should happen to stump our experts, which does happen on occasion, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions and also the correct answers to Information, please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Information, please, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 20th, 1941 on NBC. This is an hour of quiz shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In that last broadcast, the question was asked how much the president made per year, and the answer was $75,000. In today's money, that's $1.1 million. And next in this episode of the Quiz Kids, they are playing in part for a $100 savings bond, which would be worth upwards of $900 today. This NBC episode, hosted by Joe Kelly, heard on January 28, 1951.
The Quiz Kids! With the chief quizzer himself, Joe Kelly. Hello, everyone. It's time to enjoy another Alka-Seltzer question session with America's famous quiz kids. Well, we have a very interesting theme for our program this afternoon, and here is our quartet to tell you about it.
We'll discuss ancient history and old Bible days of long, long ago, long, long ago. If you answer correctly, you will us amaze, for questions you'll know of long, long ago.
That's right. The Quiz Kids will be asked to review biblical and ancient times. And here to tell us what they know about the long, long ago are Patrick.
I am Patrick Owen Conlon. I'm 13 years old and 1A at Calumet High School in Chicago.
Marlene.
I'm Marlene Richmond. I'm 15 years old and a senior at Roosevelt High School.
Joe.
I'm Joel Coverman. I'm 14 years old and I'm in 3A at Roosevelt High School.
Penny.
I'm Penny Bergstrom. I'm 12 years old. I'm in the 8th grade at Riley School.
And little Harvey.
I'm Harvey Deitch. I'm 7 years old, and I go to Hibbert School, and I'm in grade 3B.
All right, kids. Now, your first question is a riddle from Mrs. Helen Carter of St. Louis, Missouri. Why didn't Noah play canasta on the ark? Pat.
Well, because he sat on the deck.
That's all right, Patty boy. Yes, sir, that's fine and dandy. We're off to a real good start. Now, children, we're really going back to ancient times for this question from Marjorie Davidson of St. Louis, Missouri. You kids are to suppose you are the attendants at a zoo and are conducting a group of sightseers from cage to cage. But this zoo is filled entirely with birds and animals that are now extinct. And you can describe any extinct creature you wish as we go along in our imaginary tour. Now, who wants to try this? Harvey?
Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this here is the moa bird.
What bird?
Moa bird.
Oh, fine. Go ahead. Yeah.
And they just found this bird in New Zealand. And they hurried home to tell the white man about it. But by the time the white man got there, it was very rare.
Fine, Harley. All right, Pat has his hand up.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is an Archaeopteryx. It was extinct a long time ago and is the modern forerunner of a bird. It's a reptile and it has on its wings lots of teeth and claws.
Well, that's very, very good, Patty. Joel?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a Tyrannosaurus. It is an upright-looking reptile, very fierce, a carnivorous, which ate its herbivorous companions in the ancient wilds and became extinct with the other dinosaurs.
Oh, that's fine, Joel, fine. Harvey?
Well, this here is an Eryops. As you can see, it looks like a giant frog with a very long... long tail. Its mouth is very big, as you see, and it would be only bigger if they had to move back its two front feet back. It's a very lazy animal because all it has to do is just open its mouth, dive underwater, and get up a lot of fish.
Well, that's wonderful. Now, isn't that wonderful? I was especially impressed with the fact that it had a little long tail, like you said there. Yeah, that was cute. Well, as you know, friends, the Quiz Kids program is unrehearsed, and the questions asked are sent in by you listeners. When a question is answered correctly, the Alka-Seltzer Award is a fine Zenith transoceanic portable radio that gives worldwide reception no matter where you are. It's really a dandy set and one you'll be proud to own. Now then, when the Quiz Kids miss a question, the Alka-Seltzer Award is a Zenith television set or a large console Zenith radio phonograph combination. The television set is the Zenith Buchanan, and it has everything. A new Super Range chassis to ensure the ultimate in performance, the sensational built-in picture magnet aerial, single knob automatic tuning, and the glare band black tube for clearer pictures. The large console radio phonograph plays all types of records and has AM and FM radio. Now, if you would like to try for one of these fine Zeniths, send in a question for our radio program. Address your questions to Quiz Kids, Box Y, Chicago 77, Illinois. Now, kids, this Bible question, this next one here from Mrs. Dolores Stevens of New York City, makes us feel that in some ways, living described in the Old Testament was not so very different from our own. You are to tell who in the Bible might have been arrested if he were living today, judging by these instances. Here's the first one.
If modern traffic rules were enforced in ancient times, who in the Old Testament might have paid a lot of fines for driving fast in his chariot? A careless driver he, for he did not care a lot.
Joel?
Well, I believe that would be Jehu, and it was said of him he drove furiously.
That's right. That's correct, Joel, my boy. Now then, tell us, who might have been arrested in this instance?
No trespassing is what today we read. No trespassing, they should have taken heed. Not one of them, but two of them, the both of them disobeyed. Now not just those two, but for generations we have paid.
Well, now, let's see. Little Harvey has his hand up. Harvey?
Well, wouldn't it be Adam and Eve who trespassed into the Garden of Arden and got the apple off of the forbidden tree?
That's right. That's good enough for me, Harvey. Oh, boy. Now, Mrs. Mary Street of Kansas City, Missouri, I want you to pretend you boys and girls were living in Rome in 70 A.D. Suppose your friends came over to your house, and while you were playing a game of marbles in the atrium, your shooter went into the impluvium. In what part of the house would you be playing, and how might the position of your shooter make your next shot a bit difficult? Joel?
Well, the atrium, I believe, was the main room of the place, and frequently it would be the courtyard.
That's right, yes.
I'm not sure, but I think the implosium is sort of like a swimming pool or a fountain.
Well, that's...
And therefore, it would be a rather difficult shot from the bottom of a swimming pool.
That's right, it would be underwater, huh? Very good, Joel, very good. You know, we have many great stars in modern sports, of course, but Gertrude Schultz of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, says there are certain characters from way back in mythology who would have compared favorably with our present-day champions. Now, what legendary person might have been known as the Johnny Weissmuller of his day? Joe?
Well, there was, I believe, this man Hero who swam the Hellespont almost every night to visit his girlfriend.
Well, now, wait a minute. What name did you give me there?
English.
Did you say Hero?
Yeah.
I think that was the young lady's name.
Leander.
Leander, that's it. That's right. And who might have been known as the gorgeous George of mythology? Pat?
Well, the girl, that might be Hercules.
Hercules? Very, very good, Patty. This next question from Mrs. Alice Thurston of New York City is a tough Bible race, kids. She wants to find out just how nimble and alert children are in using their knowledge of the Bible and finding specific chapters and verses. Now, we'll give all of you kids Bibles, and I'll name a book of the Bible, chapter, and verse. And as soon as you find it, raise your hand, and when I call on you, start reading the verse. Also, to answer this question correctly, you must find each reference in 10 seconds. All right, now you have your Bibles, and here's the first one. On your marks, Psalms 1, 6. 1, 2, 3. Penny? All right, Penny.
For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish.
Oh, that's wonderful, Penny, wonderful. In only 3 seconds. All right, quickly now, 10 seconds. 1 Corinthians 2, 3. 1. Two. Penny?
And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling.
Very, very good. How do you like that? Now then, kids, here's a real hard one. Isaiah 42, 12. One. Penny? My.
Let him give glory unto the Lord and declare his praise in the islands.
Penny, that's amazing, isn't it, folks? Really is. All right, now, let's see what our next one is here. Dorothy Harrison of Bellingham, Washington, asks how Jacob's pillow of the Bible has recently been featured in the news. Joe?
Well, when the Stone of Scone was stolen in England, and it was supposed to be the Royal Stone of Scotland, it was claimed that the stone originally went back to biblical times and was Jacob's pillow, this stone he rested upon when he had one of his visions.
That's right, Joel, that's right. Uh-huh. And now, boys and girls, how about it? Have you sent in your letter for this year's Best Teacher Contest? Remember, you write a letter of any length on the subject, the teacher who has helped me most. You may write about a teacher you have now or one you have had in the past if that teacher is still teaching. Be sure to include your name, age, grade, school, and home address. So get busy on your letter right now, this very afternoon. Who knows? It may be a winner. All right. Now then, here's our next question here. Mrs. Ruth Henderson of Seattle, Washington, points out that women of antiquity were often very influential politically in their day. We will have the help of our quartet for this question, and you youngsters are to identify the woman in their song.
Now don't underestimate the power of a woman. She gets in her say from Washington to Truman. Now there was a nice young lady, she was born a Greek. She won a beauty contest, she looked glamorous and sleek. She kept her folks at war for longer than a week. So just because a girl's a beaut, don't think that she is meek.
Pat?
Well, that might be Cleopatra.
No, no, Joel.
Well, that'd be Helena Troy, wouldn't
it? Helena Troy, that's right. Now, what woman who influenced military leaders of her day do you find in this song?
Down by that old Egyptian stream, I met the prettiest girl in town, with her eyes of hazel brown, wearing a genuine princess gown. It was there I kept bowing to this maid of renown. I really mean she's the village queen.
Village queen.
Down by that old stream.
Marlene?
Cleopatra.
That's Cleopatra. That's right. Now then, just to see whether you kids were really alert during that Bible verse race we had, I'd like to ask in which book of the Bible you found this verse. For the Lord knoweth the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. How about that? Pat?
Well, I think that'll be Corinthians.
No. Oh, I'm checking up on you here. Uh-oh. Penny?
I believe that's in Isaiah.
No, dear. Marlene?
Exodus?
No, I think you kids are guessing now. We went through this earlier in the program. Pat?
If I remember, the one left is Psalms.
That's the boy, Pat. It finally came through.
I see it.
Well, we have a surprise guest here in our classroom to help us out on this next question. She's the leading lady of Tennessee Williams' new play, Rose Tattoo. I'm going to introduce her in just a minute, but right now, it's Alka-Seltzer. First, fast, and always.
Yes, remember Alka-Seltzer when you come home feeling like this.
Oh, boy, what a day. The boss sure put me through the loops today. Do this, do that, where's this, what happened to that? I'm really done in. Tired out.
The first thing to do is drink a glass of sparkling Alka-Seltzer, mister, and see how fast you feel better.
Alka-Seltzer?
That's right. Always depend on Alka-Seltzer. Relax and freshen up with Alka-Seltzer. Just dissolve one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets in a glass of water, then drink the sparkling, refreshing solution this makes. See how quickly and effectively Alka-Seltzer can relieve the tired, tense, aching muscles and headache. How its sparkling, alkalizing properties actually help speed recovery from the fatigue itself. And listen, here's something else. To help you rest better and wake up feeling better, drink another glass of Alka-Seltzer before you go to bed. Yes, Alka-Seltzer offers real relief from that tired, tense feeling that follows a hectic day of nervous tension and hard work. Try it, won't you?
You bet I will. Alka-Seltzer right now, or whenever I come home after a work-weary day. And Alka-Seltzer again before I go to bed. A good idea.
It is. Alka-Seltzer will be first with you for fast relief. Always rely on Alka-Seltzer.
Ask your druggist for Alka-Seltzer.
First,
fast,
and always.
Now then, I want to introduce lovely Miss Maureen Stapleton, who plays the leading role in Tennessee Williams' new play, Rose Tattoo. Miss Stapleton. Miss Stapleton, I hear that the play Rose Tattoo has left Chicago after its very successful run, and the play will be going right on to New York to make its debut there. Is that right?
Yes, Joe. We open in New York next Saturday at the Martin Beth.
Oh, good for you. Well, now, kid, Miss Stapleton is here to help us with this next question from Mrs. Emily Hart of Denver, Colorado. So the classroom is all yours, Miss Stapleton.
Well, for this question, you're to identify the following women of biblical history, whom I'm going to portray. Here's the first one. Hearken, thou art pursued. Whither the men went, I wot not. Get you to the mountain and hide there 3 days. Behold, when you come again to this land, ye shall see this scarlet thread bound to my window. Then, because I save you now, ye shall protect my brethren and me, and see we are harmed not when ye return to this city. I couldn't see
Pat's
who was
hand
first.
Was up first to
Pat?
The stable.
Well, that would be Rahab.
Uh-huh.
And she was helping Joshua's.
That's right.
All right, who's speaking in this instance? Listen to me. The king has evil intent toward thee. If thou save not thy life tonight, tomorrow thou shalt be slain. No, no, speakest not, but hear me. I shall let thee down from the window and hide an image and pillow of goat's hair in the bed. And when the king's messengers come asking for thee, I will say, he is not well. I think Pat was first again.
That's right.
Well, that would be Michael, who was David's wife.
That's right.
Well,
oh, my goodness.
Thank you, Miss Stapleton. It certainly was a pleasure to have you visit us, and we wish you all the luck in the world in New York.
Thanks.
Bye. Now for this question, kids, from Margaret Wilson of New Orleans, Louisiana, the quartet will sing a special arrangement of a beautiful hymn. And you are to try to give the composer of either the music or lyrics. Let's listen.
Adoramus Christe.
Pat?
Well, I think that'll be Adoramus Te Christi, and, that was written, I think, by Palestrina.
That's right. That's good boy, Pat. Good boy. All right, let's listen to the next one.
All people that on earth do dwell, sing to the Lord with cheerful voice. Him serve with mirth. His praise foretell. Come ye before him and rejoice.
Well, no hands. How about that lovely hymn? Who wrote the music? Or who wrote the lyrics? No? Well, I'm going to tell you because I have them on my card. The name of the hymn, of course, was Praise God from Whom All Blessings Flow. Thomas Ken wrote the lyrics and Louis Bourgeois the melody. Now, Ecclesia, of course, that was a miss, and that means that Margaret Wilson of New Orleans, Louisiana, will receive from the makers of Alka-Seltzer her choice between a large console Zenith radio phonograph combination or a fine Zenith television set for stomping you kids. That's first miss, I think, this afternoon. Clasia Curtis of Peru, Vermont, has noticed that quite a few of the products we find in our stores bear the names of mythological characters, and she wants you to tell why you think these brand names are well suited to the various products. The first one is Medusa Cement. All right, Marlene.
Well, Medusa's head was, well, it was hideous, and I suppose cement was more or less, it's thick, and you just can't get out of it once you get in. Is that the idea? Or...
Well, I think Joel, he has his hand up, can clear us up on that. What are you going to say, Joel?
Well, her head turned anybody who looked on her face to stone.
That's right. That's it. And now then, kids, before I give you the special and exciting news about next Sunday, here's an important message.
Don't take chances. Don't guess that you and your family get enough of the essential vitamins. Make sure they do by seeing that each member takes one-a-day brand multiple vitamins every day. You can't keep feeling your best nor looking your best unless you get enough vitamins. One-a-day brand multiple vitamins taken every day give complete protection against a lack of any or all of the vitamins known to be essential. Ask for and insist on getting the vitamins with the big one on the package.
Well, kids, you did fine with your questions on biblical and ancient times this afternoon. And as usual, you will each receive a $100 savings bond from the makers of Alka-Seltzer to help you with your future education. Now then, here's the big news about next week. The American Dental Association is celebrating the third annual National Children's Dental Health Day in Cleveland, Ohio. And the Quiz Kids have been invited to broadcast next Sunday's program from Cleveland. We're very happy about this invitation, and we're looking forward to seeing all of you folks there in person. And I know you listeners will enjoy hearing five prominent dentists match brains and wits with Joel Kopperman, Naomi Cooks, Patrick Conlon, Harvey Deitch, and one of Cleveland's own Quiz Kids. And you know something? I understand these dentists have been drilling and drilling. So it looks like it's going to be a painless battle royal next Sunday. So plan to be with us, won't you? And friends, between now and then, remember that your dimes and dollars are powerful weapons in the fight against infantile paralysis. So make your contribution to the 1951 March of Dimes more generous than ever before, won't you? And now, until next Sunday from Cleveland, Ohio, this is Joe Kelly dismissing the Quiz Kids. Goodbye, kids.
Goodbye,
Bye, Mr. Kelly.
Listen to the Quiz Kids coast to coast every Sunday afternoon and see and hear Alka-Seltzer's Quiz Kids television show on NBC. Consult your local newspaper for time and station. This is Franklin Ferguson speaking, transcribed.
Be sure to hear Danny Kaye, Gary Cooper, and Ray Bolger on The Big Show today on NBC.
The Quiz Kids on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from January 28, 1951. And that wraps up this hour of quiz shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.